Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Alarmy. Before we dive into this episode, we want to make sure that you've heard the big news. The Alarmist has joined Patreon. We'll still be putting out 2 episodes a week wherever you get your podcasts, so don't panic. Patreon subscribers will get access to our content ad-free, as well as be able to listen to our discussion and final verdict in our Aftermath episodes. We'll also be putting out additional bonus content and other fun stuff. So come join us at patreon.com/thealarmist. We'll also include a link to the Patreon in our show description. So join us on Patreon. We're excited to have you come on board. And now on to our episode.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the murder of Scott Amador. Here's what you need to know. On the morning of March 9th, 1995, 32-year-old Scott Amador was at home with his roommate in Lake Orion, Michigan, when the doorbell rang. Scott's neighbor and friend, 24-year-old Jonathan Schmitz, was at the door. Jonathan calmly asked Scott if he had left a note for him at his apartment, and Scott replied, yes. Jonathan then told him he'd be right back, that he had to turn off his running car. Scott waited as Jonathan went to his vehicle and retrieved a brand new 12-gauge shotgun. Jonathan aimed the gun and shot Scott in the chest twice at close range. The fatal blows instantly killed Scott Amador, who was only holding a wicker armchair to shield himself. 3 days before, on March 6, 1995, Scott had revealed he had a crush on Jonathan on a taping of The Jenny Jones Show. The program, a daytime talk show that had been running for 4 years at this point, was featuring a secret crush episode.
Watch it now to meet Donna And Scott, now Donna has been helping Scott pursue his secret crush on John.
Low ratings in the show's early seasons led to a call for more voyeuristic and exploitative content, similar to the successes of the talk shows at the time, such as Jerry Springer. A week prior to the taping, Jonathan had received a call from the show's producers stating that he had a secret admirer that would reveal themselves on national television. Interested, Jonathan agreed to be on the show. The segment on the show began with Jenny Jones asking Scott to tell the audience about his sexual fantasies regarding Jonathan, who backstage was totally unaware and unable to hear what his friend was saying. Jonathan would later report that producers had told him that his, quote, dream girl was announcing her crush on him on live television, a claim that show producers would later reject. Jenny Jones asked Scott and their mutual friend, Donna Riley, about the nature of Scott's feelings for Jonathan. Scott detailed a fantasy he had about Jonathan involving a hammock, whipped cream, and strawberries. Just then, Jonathan was introduced and entered the stage, clearly stunned to see Scott. Scott, with the prodding of the audience and Jenny Jones, told Jonathan that he had been harboring a secret crush. In footage that later became public, Jonathan turns to Scott and Donna and says, quote, "You lied to me," while laughing awkwardly. Jenny Jones continues to drive Scott's secret crush delivery home, complete with playing back the audio of his fantasies for Jonathan to hear. Jonathan laughs and smiles awkwardly and remains polite throughout, occasionally covering his face with his hands in embarrassment. At the end of the segment, he states that while he's flattered, he's straight.
Did you have any idea that he liked you this much?
No, I did not.
Can you tell us what your status is? Are you involved with anybody or?
No, but I am definitely a heterosexual, I guess you could say.
Scott, Donna, and Jonathan flew home together from Chicago back to Michigan. A few days later, Scott, unaware of Jonathan's state of mind after the show, left a suggestive note on his front door. It would prove to be the last form of contact Scott would have with Jonathan before receiving the dreaded knock on his door. Immediately after Jonathan shot Scott, he drove to a payphone, called 911, and turned himself in.
Ma'am, my sister has to get this out of man.
Okay, calm down, okay?
Okay,
why did you do that?
And he replied, because he played a very bad thing on me. He took me on Jenny Jones. Fun facts, aka death stats. The Jenny Jones Show ran from 1991 to 2003. It ran for 8 years after the murder and controversy. The episode never aired as part of the show's broadcast. Jonathan Schmitz withdrew $300 in cash and bought the shotgun and bullets to kill Scott the morning of the murder. Jonathan suspected his secret admirer may have been Donna Riley, who was also Scott's friend and neighbor. Jonathan was originally found guilty of second-degree murder in 1996. However, the conviction was overturned on appeal to jury selection errors. He received the same sentence in his 1999 hearing. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact-checking for us is associate producer Crystal Dinsberg.
Hello.
And our returning guest today is actor friend Tony Rodriguez. Hi, Tony.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
We're happy to have you on the show. And I just want to tell our listeners that Tony has a movie coming out in the fall. It's called Maximum Truth. And you can also catch Tony the third Friday of every month performing improv with Spanish Aquí at the UCB in L.A. Did I get it all right?
Yes.
Nailed
Thank
it.
You so much.
We got a movie star in our midst.
Mm-hmm. You know, television, movies.
Stage, comedy.
Improv even.
What can't you do? What can't you do, Tony?
I'm not great with choreography.
Oh, okay.
But other than that,
you're perfect.
And to weigh in on complicated historical episodes.
Yes, and that's why we have you here today. I mean, complicated and sad, but even before we dive in, I want to ask you what we always like to ask our guests. What is something that's recently alarming you? What's something that's keeping you up at night?
I mean, as we're recording this, literally this kept me up last night, as you know. I don't know when this is coming out, but SAG.
Yes.
Board officially asked its members to vote for strike authorization, and I wish I've gotten so good in my like nighttime routine. I'm like, don't read the news.
Yeah.
Don't do anything. But I couldn't help but like go on Twitter, and it literally kept me up at night. I've been up, I was up for like 2.5 hours in the middle. I'm like, oh my God, Tony, just go to sleep. But you, that's literally that kept me up last night.
That's a good practice of like shutting off the news at a certain hour.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm sorry about the strike authorization. And you know, for the alarmy out there who is not in LA. I feel like the news is kind of covering all of LA, but for those of you out there, you know, we're going, the entertainment industry right now, the writers were on strike, the directors are potentially going to go on strike, and then after that will come the actors if no deal is made by, I believe actors are by June 30th, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yes. Mm. So it's just like this feeling of impending doom for all of us here.
Yeah.
But I will say, you know, we're fighting for a good cause, and, you know, that's not going to help you not stay up at night.
Yeah.
But maybe.
Maybe. Although, like, Twitter, whatever algorithm was working late before this was just like animal videos, like a puppy and a raccoon are friends. I'm like, that's perfect bedtime content.
Oh no, you screwed up your algorithm. I'm so sorry.
I'm like, yeah, now it's
all doom and dread. That's all you're
exactly
gonna get.
Welcome to our club.
Oh wow.
Welcome
I'm
to
sure
our feed.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have to transition into this very terrible, terrible, sad tragedy. I don't know about you guys, but this one really, really hit me hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It did back in the day when it happened, too, as a young gay man. So
yes. I can only imagine. What was your experience like reading this in the news back in 1995?
I mean, in 95, I was 13, so it just kept me deep in the closet because, you know, what else is there to say? It's like it's the mid-90s. It's a very specific time in the LGBTQ community. It's not a happy time. I mean, there's visibility, but there's a huge reaction,
right?
Pretty violent reaction to what's happening with that visibility. So, yeah, scary time.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, I'm sure you can.
Yeah. 100% what Clayton just said.
Tony and I were both in Miami, so
that's right.
And
Rebecca,
mm-hmm.
while we're talking about visibility of queers and gays, although back then it was gay, right?
Yes.
So the word was. I don't know if you know who Pedro Zamora was.
No.
He was on the second season of The Real World, San Francisco. Mm,
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
He was the HIV positive person that died of AIDS.
Oh.
But he was the first. He went to my high school, and he was the first Miami Palmetto.
Yeah, represent.
Yeah, represent. but he was the first gay man that I met in person. He came to my middle school class and talked about HIV AIDS. And I really remembered, like, you know that thing of like recognition? You're like, oh, I see myself in this person. And also I was very, I'm still in awe of what he was doing at that time.
Right.
Yeah.
Putting himself out there in the mid 90s and to try to educate people about HIV AIDS and being out. But in my mind as a gay kid in the 90s, being gay meant death. It meant
shame.
Sadness. It was just, I mean, Philadelphia, wasn't that in like 94 or something?
I mean,
the movie?
For context, it's like this incident happened in 95. In 96, the Defense of Marriage Act was passed, which was like defining marriage between a man and a woman. You had like Jeremy or Matthew Shepard was murdered in Laramie like 2 years later. Like the movies that were coming out about this community were all like people with AIDS, people who were being rejected by their family. Like they weren't happy, normal, just like a person in life. It was all pretty heavy.
Like,
that's the context that this show is happening in.
Mm-hmm.
And at that, at that time, you know, being a 13-year-old or just being any kind of teenager is such a formative time that I'm sure it must have been so scarring and so like deeply frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm in entertainment now, so that's what happened there.
Yeah, we all turned to comedy.
To cope.
To soothe our... Yeah.
It's true.
Yep.
Yeah, the best comedians usually have some pretty deep trauma, so...
Yes. Oh. But, so, I mean, one of the resources that Crystal actually put on the... for us to watch. I'm not sure if you got a chance, but there's this Court TV live stream that from the actual court case, and they took about, I think it was like an hour and a half to watch the entire episode, because this episode never aired. It was a Secret Crushes episode that never aired because the Scott got shot literally
3 days later.
3 days later.
Right.
So they didn't even have time to air it. And you can watch the entire episode. And it is...
Yeah, the clips are awful. It's so...
Terrible.
Like...
And it's not even... By the time that Jonathan and Scott come on, I think they're like the third guests, I believe. Already what has... transpired beforehand is so gross to watch now, you know, where, because the entire episode was people coming out with secret crushes, but they were all surprising the other person that it was a same sex crush.
The whole episode.
And the first ones on that come on is a trans woman who is, you know, and Jenny Jones very like coyly says, now I'm sure you heard me when I said up front that this was all same sex, so if her crush is a boy, what does that mean?
It's so real, it's awful. It's just like, let's bring on these like freaks and make them the butt of the joke for this entire episode, because like how gross that someone would be attracted to someone of the same sex. Or
yes,
whatever.
Can you believe it? And everyone,
yeah,
like,
shocking.
What's
the normal person going to do when the freak outs them? You know, like that's basically, this is what the show is.
So this is the setting. Terrible, terrible time. I think we got to start by putting Jonathan Schmitz up on the board.
Let's do that.
This is from the Associated Press. Amador's roommate Gary T. Brady testified that Schmitz knocked on the door of the house they shared in Lake Orion on March 9th and asked to see Amador. Brady said he directed Schmitz to the bathroom where Amador was shaving. A short time later, Schmitz went back to his station wagon, saying he was going to turn off the engine. He again knocked on the front door and Amador answered. Scott said, "Gary, he's got a gun. He's going to shoot me," Brady recalled in a halting voice. Brady said that after the first shot struck Amador in the chest, he ran down to the hall to escape, then returned. Scott was standing in the process of falling to the floor when the second blast occurred. I went to Scott to try to get a pulse or see if he was still alive. Brady testified Schmitz was perfectly well composed before the shooting. This is from Esquire. Jonathan Schmitz got out of jail in 2017 at the age of 47 after serving 22 years. At the time, Scott Amador's older brother, Frank Amador Jr., who was featured heavily in the first episode of Trial by Media, told the Detroit Free Press that he was troubled by the parole decision. Quote, "I wanted assurance that the decision was not based on just good behavior in prison," he said. "I like to know that he learned something, that he's a changed man. He's no longer homophobic and has gotten psychological care."
That's the older brother saying that about Scott?
About about Jonathan.
Who was released from prison.
I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Jonathan.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was definitely premeditated. Mm-hmm. He literally took out money from an ATM that morning, went to buy the gun,
went to the house, left the gun in the car, you know?
Right.
He could have just left. He could have just left, then went back to the car to get the gun. And this was 3 days later. And you know, there's in the trial, there was a lot of back and forth about what had happened in these 3 days, what had happened right after, because they did go to a bar after the recording of the show. They did, you know, get back on a plane together, the three friends, the other neighbor who was also at the show. So what was happening in Jonathan's mind? We don't know, but go on, Clayton.
I was just going to say, what's kind of some of the grossness around this too, is that like Jonathan Schmidt's defense team, like really played up this fact how Scott was like just pursuing him and would do whatever he wanted with Jonathan and pushing Jonathan, as if that's somehow like a defense for why it was justified, you know, this, you know, and it's not just like, an advance. It's an advance from, let's be clear, from another man. So like the taboo or like the disgust or the shame of that. And it's like, that's so ridiculous. I mean, like, listen, even if that were true, if Scott were being like shamelessly and very aggressively making advances towards this man, that doesn't justify. I mean, do you know how many men make unwanted aggressive advances on women? Like they don't get to turn around and shoot that man because the guy just is being, it's like the whole like premise of it is so deeply homophobic.
Yes. Deeply. I know this is such victim blaming that is happening in this case. You know, we see it a lot with, you know, in cases where a woman is raped and, you know, it's like, oh, she deserved it. She was wearing this, you know, it's the same tactic here. You know, it's the same, like he made advances toward me. So he, you know, somehow he had it coming.
Right.
I read America's trusted news source, Wikipedia entry on this. And it said something about how Jonathan may have had some bipolar issues or
Graves disease, I think.
Yes. So they testified, some doctors testified on trial that he was bipolar, that he had Graves disease, which Graves disease is it's an immune system disorder that results in the overproduction of thyroid hormones. And apparently some side effects or some something it can cause is depression.
That should have been, if that was the case, the only defense.
And also not even, like, that's not even enough.
Right.
That to me is like, it sounds like the same argument that people make for guns aren't the problem. It's mental health. It's like,
oh my God.
No, the homophobia here is the problem. It's not the mental health. Like, let's be clear about what's happening here. Like, there's a lot of depressed people. They aren't just like murdering people who have crushes on them. You know, like, come on.
Yes.
It reminded me of the Twinkie defense a little bit. When Dan White, Dan White, when he killed Harvey Milk, they were like, oh, he had Twinkies that day.
He ate too much sugar.
Like a team of lawyers or a lawyer, we're like, that's the one.
That's good. Go with that narrative.
He made an advance on him. That's the one. That's the one. Good Lord.
Well, in this trial by media show, that episode that I watched, you know, they interviewed the defense lawyer, and I had a hard time watching him talk about this case because he's so proud of how he was able to create this narrative.
Oh, yeah. Really? He's got to believe it, too. Yes. They've got to believe it.
Yes.
Because that's what they're representing.
They present him as, oh, Jonathan was such a good guy. You know, he was...
He had mental health issues. Yes. He was a victim.
His father had hit him when he was young. You know, poor Jonathan. And then on top of this, all of a sudden, he's being approached by a gay man. He's put through this... Look, I'm not saying that talk shows don't have anything to blame here.
Right. And they did push the whole Jenny Jones thing, which I do think like it's gross that this was a topic, but
And also, like, you know, like,
right.
I don't think that's a reason to shoot anyone.
Was this interview recent? Or was this like right after the trial?
You're talking about the interview with the defense attorney?
With the defense. Yeah. Yeah, it was more recent. Crystal's still on it. This was still. Crystal's on it. This came out maybe a few years ago. But while Crystal's finding that info out, let's put sensationalism of talk shows up on the board.
This is the dark version of Family Feud.
Oh my God.
On the board? Is it on the board?
Yeah, by the way, we have the answer. So it looks like it was released, the episode was released May 11th of 2020.
Okay.
For trial by media. And it was just, yeah.
I think I saw this during Pandy Times.
Pandy
just
times.
A real feel good watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I had to watch the Golden Girls to like, watch that.
That was a regular every night for me.
This is from the New York Times. Mr. Schmitz's father, Alan, told a local news television station after the verdict that he blamed Miss Jones and her talk show for his son's actions. I hope this changes to the talk shows. They're absolutely rotten, Mr. Schmitz said. He had she not done this, this would never have happened.
Ooh.
Miss Jones testified at the trial that she did not believe that her show was ambush television. Jonathan Schmitz was told before the show that he would meet a secret admirer. But Miss Jones, her producers said at the trial that Mr. Schmitz had been allowed to believe that the admirer might be a woman. At a news conference after the verdict was announced, members of the jury were asked whether they thought the murder would have taken place if the two men had not been presented to each other on television. At least two jurors replied in unison, probably not. Gordon Elliott, the host of the Gordon Elliott Show, said that the incident had promoted production company lawyers to pay more attention to talk shows that ambush guests. But Mr. Elliott added that the number of such talk shows seemed to be dwindling. This kind of show is not disappearing by any kind of edict, he said, but because it's tawdry.
Mm.
So this, yeah, go on.
I feel like what I kind of come back to a lot, I think this is very interesting, this question of like whether it would have happened had the show occurred, and the fact that these jurors, two of them, are like probably not. And I tend to agree that that's highly likely, because when you go back to what he said on the 911 call, when right after he's murdered Scott and he's telling 911 saying, I just shot a guy, I think I killed him. And they say, why? And he's like, because he took me on a show, and he took me on the Jenny Jones show, and he like fucked me over.
Yeah.
And all of that, like, that to me seems like a moment in this man's life of like real clarity. Like, he's just murdered a man. Like, his adrenaline is probably through the roof, and he's just like speaking his truth at that moment. And it all seems to be rooted in this, like, his idea of like a public humiliation, a public shaming. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to think of another situation where this friend of his maybe comes on to him in an intimate setting and it escalates to murder. I mean, it's possible.
It's possible. And it has happened before.
But it wasn't he came on to me. It's he took me on a show and he fucked me over on a show. In like it's the public visibility at this time to me that makes it seem like this was definitely a trigger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think? I was thinking of the Fox News brouhaha where it took like discovered text from Tucker Carlson for them to do anything. Like, there was like, well, we're just putting on a show. What's the big idea? I wonder if there was any kind of like paper record of them.
Oh, like, the producers?
Yeah, like, we want them to fight. That's what the show's for. Like, and obviously, if the audience is reacting the way they do, I feel like they were primed for like, right? Like,
if they were text. Or if there were cell phones back then as prominent as they are today, I guarantee you probably could have found some pretty racy texts between the producers. That's a very interesting question.
Like that would turn any gray area, like it would be black and white, literally. It would just be like right there. They wanted a fight. And so, I don't know.
Well, they definitely
were spot.
They want to rile the audience up, and you can hear it. Oh my God, it's so interesting in this court TV I don't know, link or
right
file. It's on YouTube.
Content.
File. I kept calling it a file.
That's 1995 Rebecca talking.
A floppy disk. You can hear it in the floppy disk. You can hear in between, you know, when they pause for commercial breaks, you know, it's not live, but they still pause during the show where the commercial break would be to bring in the next audience and to reset the cameras. And you can hear Jenny Jones and the producers talking on there saying like, oh, that was good. Did you see how they react? Oh, yeah, that was really good. They were riled up.
Well, and her follow-up questions alone, like, does that make you uncomfortable? You know, like asking him, how does it make you feel? Like, it's very obvious what the desired effect is that they're after. All the questions are very, they're leading, you know, like that's, let's be clear. Like, we know what this show is about. Like, how do you feel that this gay man is attracted to you? And like showing the clips of like, you know, it's just so gratuitous, like the, oh, the whipped cream and the straw, like, like really like visual things. Like, what else are you trying to do but to like rile up this person and get their reaction? Like, it is truly like shock daytime,
right? Ambush, 90s
television.
Yeah. Let's put the producers up on the board.
Yes.
This is from People Magazine. Echoing his family's former attorney, Frank Amager Jr. says, I do, and some of my family members do feel that Jonathan Schmitz was only as much to blame as the Jenny Jones show. Their people are criminals for what they did. Jonathan Schmitz was sort of like a fall guy for their conspiracy. But Jones told People in 1999 that one person was ultimately to blame. It was not the Jenny Jones murder, she said. It was the Jonathan Schmitz murder. Washington Post wrote, whatever caused the demise of Mr. Amager is a direct result of a swell of factors triggered by the events that occurred at the Jenny Jones taping, said Gibson. Strikingly, the Oakland County prosecutor and sheriff's department, who were charged with making the case against Schmitz, agreed that the attorney defending him It's a sad situation, said Thompson, the prosecutor. Because of this show, we have one person dead and another person who thought he was going to meet the girl of his dreams is sitting in the prison cell facing a life sentence in murder. For murder. Ugh, I hate this quote for many reasons. It's like one person's dead and the other one, thought he was going to meet the girl of his dreams. And instead, this happened. I'm sorry. Those are not the same thing. Okay, we will continue. What makes this more than a routine murder case is this. If Amager had not revealed a secret crush on Schmitz during the taping of the Jenny Jones show, says the lawyers and prosecutors involved in the case, he would not be dead and Schmitz would not be in jail. This, of course, has prompted a national debate over shock television, but what seems to have been lost is the story of two ordinary young Americans whose lives were brought together in the most bizarre way. I don't think
and
that...
And then one of them killed the other one.
Yeah, I don't think they were...
Premeditated.
I mean, their lives were brought together... Yes, their lives were brought together because they were neighbors. So,
right.
And that's not bizarre to me.
No.
An event happened that, you know, might be bizarre, sure. But that's not how they were brought together.
I want to put up, just because we've been saying these a lot and they're not officially on the board, but I want to put up ambush television and I want to put up homophobia.
Oh, yes. Just,
I feel like we've been saying these. And
yes.
So Jerry Springer is in this vein, right? I mean, he was like the breakout, what's it called? Like, Phil Donahue was more responsible, I feel, right? But he did these kinds of things as well, right? He was the very first one.
I feel like Phil was more like Oprah style, or is a little bit more earnest, but and like like Sally Jesse Raphael, like
trying
to be more highbrow, I guess. Yeah.
Yes, while still having some of their cake, I think sometimes they wanted.
Ricky Lake also was getting into the like dirty, you know.
She towed the line, right?
It was definitely part of like the. They were all competing for ratings, which sounds like, I mean, maybe we put that on the board.
Ooh, money.
Yeah. Capitalism.
Capitalism. Put it on the board. Put it on the board.
I mean, absolutely.
Just because we're talking about shock television, I want to put that. Maybe this falls under shock. This is, again, from the same Washington Post article. Schmitz was reluctant to agree to the appearance and told producer he would have to think about it. According to Schmitz's attorney, Fred Gibson, Schmitz, who has pleaded not guilty in the case, didn't know who had set it up. But in the back of his mind, he thought maybe it was Donna and Scott. Donna Riley was Schmitz's neighbor. Scott Amager was her friend. Trying to puzzle out who his secret admirer might be, Schmitz went so far as to drop in on Riley, who lived above him in a two-story garden apartment complex, to ask if either had any big plans to be in Chicago the next Monday. The two assured him they were doing other things. As far as he's concerned, those two people wouldn't be there, said Gibson. So Schmitz spent several hundred dollars on new clothes and made the expense-paid trip to Chicago on Sunday afternoon, hoping that his dream woman was waiting for him. Now, I just want to note that this article was clearly written in 1995. Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. It's a very 1995 perspective. Yeah. I wonder how this article would be written in 2023. Oh my God.
Can you imagine the tragedy of buying new clothes?
I know. He bought new clothes.
And you can't show them off to your hot new crush.
Yeah, and then you buy a gun after you're buying those clothes.
Oh, yes.
Guns, culture, guns, accessibility of guns in America. Put it on the board.
Yes.
Put it on the board.
For me, what really was really shocking to me was the fact that, like you mentioned, Clay, the whipped cream, the strawberries, the hammock, them playing back the personal, intimate details of Scott's fantasies to Jonathan. I really feel like the sensationalism of talk shows, right? Like just that ambush feel. It's so weird because this person's mental state, they did not do any type of test. They didn't do anything to like make sure that this person was sane. But mm-hmm. when you think about all the things they did to set up a fight, I think Tony had mentioned that earlier, they wanted blood. Mm-hmm. They got blood.
Mm-hmm.
They literally
and did. It's just like, when I was reading this, to see the amount of pushback, we didn't do it, we had nothing to do with this, is bizarre, because actually Jonathan knew that Scott was gay before.
Right.
The, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's, there's something that clicked in a weird.
Right.
That made it, you know, a point where it's now murder. So there's something that happens in his mind that a flip was switched. And I really feel like it was going on the show, and him, I think Clay said it earlier, the humiliation, but also we don't know the backlash that mentally he thought he was getting because he made that appearance. So there's something really strange there to me, because if you know somebody's gay and you had no problem with it before the show, what led to murder?
Right.
It's weird to me.
Homophobia, I think. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this, the gay panic defense. This is from the Washington Post. I have to believe.
Christ. Jeff Bezos also went to Miami Palmetto. Owner of the Washington Post.
Wow. This is, again, from the 1995 article. I have to believe that what I'm doing is right. I can hold my head high in this community and say Jonathan Tyler Schmitz is my client, said Fred Gibson. This is his defense lawyer. He says Schmitz was thrown into a situation to which he had no ability to respond. I think when it comes to heterosexual men who believe or know that a man they know is homosexual, has an interest, they fear that they might be the subject of affection and certainly shy away from that, he said. Some to a greater degree than others. This case has gay activists in the area fearful and angry. They say all the finger pointing at the talk shows has disguised the real reason this crime took place. The gay community in nearby Pontiac feels that talk about humiliation and embarrassment on national television is just smoke and mirrors for a law community that seems to sympathize with the rage that caused Schmitz to murder Amador. Scott Amador is still going to be dead after all this is over, said Jeffrey Montgomery, president of the Triangle Foundation, a Detroit area gay advocacy group. The question is, will the man who did this for no other reason than that he was gay be exonerated? Sympathy for Schmitz outrages the local gay community. Scott Amador was murdered because he was gay, and that needs to not be lost in on all this talk about talk shows, said Jan Peterson, who works at Affirmations, a local center for the gay community. The Associated Press wrote about 50 people gathered outside the Oakland County Court in Pontiac on Tuesday to protest what they say has been anti-gay bias by authorities handling the case. We respond with outrage that anyone who would try to justify Scott's murder on any ground, but particularly on the grounds that he somehow asked for his own murder by simply expressing an attraction for another man.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It is gay panic. I mean, yes. I experienced this.
I mean, yes.
Still today, you
watching
know, like, little
Judd Apatow movies yes. or like comedies. It's still less and less so. Sorry, Clayton.
No. I mean, it's just in movies and television, out in public, like little like tiny comments. Mm-hmm. Like it's so ingrained. You know that it's a societal thing. It's like something mm-hmm. we're still recovering from. People don't even know at this point that they're doing it.
Right,
and we all. All of us, you know, this isn't just exclusive to gay, you know, people. This is a lot of people of color, women, like it just happens all the time.
Yes.
You just get so used to it.
Yeah. And Rebecca, maybe you can speak to this, but I encounter it in Latino spaces a lot.
Oh,
it's getting much better, but by and large. Latinos be machismo and homophobic.
Big time. And like, like so big time.
Mm-hmm.
So like, big time.
Yeah.
Rebecca and I, we were in a meeting once. We were meeting with some producers for a show. They were pitching, remember, Harvard Sailing Team.
Uh-huh.
And the guy that had brought us there, that some executive, made some like same sex joke. And then he said, oh, don't worry, I'm not gay.
Oh,
and it was like, and we all were in the room. I just remember being like shocked.
We were like,
okay. Wow. And I think about that moment all the time because I want to like go back and be like, well, I am. Is that going to be a problem?
Yeah.
Wow.
But we just like sat there and let these people pitch us on an idea they had. I'm like, wow, you really just like,
oh my God.
You know, stuff like that.
But seriously, I mean, under homophobia, according to his lawyer, Schmitz knew Scott Amador was gay, like we said, the first mm-hmm. time they met last month, but there's no evidence that he had any overt problems with Amador's sexuality. This we talked about this. Some members of the local community have told news organizations that Schmitz frequented the local gay bar scene, but the Oakland County Sheriff's Office said it has no evidence of those allegations are true. Schmitz, his family, and friends have all refused to speak to the media about the case. According to Gibson, however, Schmitz is not homophobic and hate was not a motivating factor in this crime. Whatever caused the demise of Amador is a direct result of a swell of factors triggered by the events that occurred at the Jenny Jones taping. So back to.
May I ask, what you just read, did it say the police department or sheriff's department didn't have a record of Schmidt being at a gay bar?
Right.
It said the Oakland County Sheriff's Office said it has no evidence that those allegations are true.
That he went to gay bar.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Evening officer, I'm going to party tonight. Oh, excuse me, they're playing ABBA.
Sign this form, please.
Yes.
Saying you've been here so we can round you up later.
Yes.
I want to say, based on that, like, assuming Schmitz is not homophobic, if that's true, then I want to just maybe throw up on the board. Because then it comes down to me like the like public shaming.
Me.
So it's like he was embarrassed because maybe he's not homophobic, but he knows that so many people are and how gross it would be to be like the butt of that kind of joke.
And something you were talking about, it was the backlash that happened in the 90s too, mm-hmm. right? Because I feel like the 70s were, you know, a liberating time, for
it's happening today.
Yeah.
The 70s, it was sexual. So that there's a lot of like crackdown on that and like conservative traditional families. Right now it's all trans. So there's a huge backlash and legislation across America because suddenly they are visible. It's like, we are so reactionary.
Yeah.
To people's just like civil rights and freedoms.
And what was one of the, you know, most tragic parts of that you know, gay liberation movement in the 70s was the AIDS, you know, AIDS epidemic, which really not only killed so many, but it also killed so many great leaders too.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave people just like a reason to justify the hate.
Mm-hmm. And to really stall like any kind of research or like
yes.
health.
Oh my God.
Action.
Well, yeah.
So what do we call that? Like, is it?
It's like
shame of like
reactionary. Like it's there's something about
90s
like,
reactionary
culture.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really encapsulate the queer element.
Well, I think that's it's like that has to do with like the. I mean, I just keep coming back to the word shame or like taboo nature of it. Societally, you know,
is there something about masculinity in there?
Mm.
Like, I don't think it's toxic masculinity, but like cultural. I mean, definitely the toxic masculinity has been around in culture for a while.
Yeah,
but
and I
that's
think
part of the shame element, right? Like, it's
right. Toxic. I mean, that is a part of this. I would say, why react in that way?
If you're fine with it.
If you're fine with it, yeah.
This is a little sidebar, but. I don't know if I should say this publicly. okay. I truly appreciate the straight man who's so confident with themselves that they can say a flirty thing. Very like innocent, sweet. It's not too much. It's just the right note. I appreciate it. Like,
yes.
Hey, you're looking cute today. I'm like, oh, that's a straight man saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if it would. I don't know if it goes well if that person says it to a woman. But
right.
But it's someone who's like so confident in themselves or maybe. Maybe I'm just bad at make gaydars off, and I think I'm being picked up by strikeouts.
You're just working through it right now.
Wow. Okay.
I guess that one. You know what it is? I guess it's all very personal to everyone because I know some people who don't like anyone saying anything about their appearance, right?
Right.
Male or female, man or woman. I personally love a compliment coming,
right.
I'll take it from anyone.
Right.
You look great today.
But I mean, set in the right tone and the right way, you know, respectful.
But sad is that it's that, you know, Tony receiving that compliment from another man becomes like an experience in gender where it's like,
yes.
It's not about the compliment. It's like, oh, what's the like sexuality of the gender who's giving me the compliment? Like we're so conditioned, I think, as people in the queer community to like, what's your angle? Is this
right.
Like, am I safe?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And like,
kind of like, why would you think twice about it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I would imagine, you know, also not coming off as like, you're coming on to them.
Right.
That fear.
It's deep.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not immune to our own homophobia within the gay community.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are. We can be pretty terrible to our own people.
I think I figured it out.
Okay.
I think it's an element of someone just putting out a compliment there and like, that's it.
That's it. Just run away.
The energy is just have it, take it or leave it. I'm not. I don't want anything from you. I don't want it. I'm not.
Yeah.
It's meant only to be positive. Here
yes,
it is.
Just being good
as yeah. you were. And
I love
it.
I love
drive
that,
by
like,
compliment.
I also love the setup. It's like such a long compliment because you have to add all this.
Just so you know, I'm
precursor.
Not interested in you. Blah,
yeah.
blah,
I have no
I don't
agenda.
Want anything from you. But that shirt is fire.
Yeah, that's a nice shirt. Fuck off.
You guys, we are running out of time.
Yes.
We have a hefty board. Okay, let's take a quick break and start knocking things off the board.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, who is to blame for the murder of Scott Amador? Is it Jonathan Schmitz, sensationalism of talk shows, the Jenny Jones show producers, ambush television, homophobia, capitalism, chasing ratings, shock television, gun culture, gay panic defense, 90s reactionary culture, or toxic masculinity?
Good board.
Good board. I think I remember how this goes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're gonna fold things into each other. And I think the first thing we can do is fold chasing ratings into shock television. I feel like
great minds, great minds.
Gay panic.
Homophobia, right?
Yeah. Maybe. And 90s reactionary cult. Like what do we fold it into each?
Oh.
It is homophobia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those, gay panic and the 90s reactionary culture.
I think
and homophobia.
So. I think they fold into homophobia.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm. Toxic masculinity, I mean. It's...
Well, that kind of see it stands on its own, right?
It stands that's not on its just... own, but it there's some crossover with homophobia and gun culture.
Right.
Wow. This is a heavy board.
I know, right?
My goodness.
Yeah.
Gun culture. I mean, yeah. What is that for? I think maybe it's just not to blame. It certainly was the access that he had easy access to get the weapon, but
right. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's to blame for. I mean,
but I appreciate you putting it on the board, Tony. I 100% agree. It's a problem.
Sure. It should not be that easy. It shouldn't be that easy where you're like, oh, I feel like I want to kill someone. And then let me just go buy a gun and then do
immediately.
It an hour. Yeah.
I can get the gun now if I wanted it.
I need Snickers, toilet paper, Marlboro lights.
Yeah.
Gun. Yeah, I'll take
and a gun. Yeah. Because like maybe if there had been a week or a month process to get.
If there had been the mandatory waiting period.
Yeah. Then maybe the story would be totally different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I
feel like. Sensationalism of talk shows folds into shock television, right? It's kind of one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the Jenny Jones show producers are separate than just general shock television.
Yes.
I know.
Jenny Jones. We should say Jenny Jones and the show producers.
Correct. Okay. What's she doing these days?
Good question, Crystal. What is she doing these days? Okay.
This is hard.
This is hard.
This is hard.
Oh, ambush television.
Yeah, that can fold into shock.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also feel like capitalism is, we can take that off the board.
And it folds into shock television.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For this one. Chasing dollars, ratings.
Okay, so we've got four things left on the board, and now it's going to be impossible. We have Jonathan Schmitz. We have Jenny Jones and the show producers. We have homophobia, and we have shock television.
Ooh.
Here's what I'm leaning towards. I think I'm going to have a hard time not sending Jonathan Schmitz to the alarmist jail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, like, we have to.
I think we have to.
Yes.
My question is, who do we slap? Because, wow. I mean, there's an argument for sending homophobia to the alarmist jail.
For sure. Which was kind of like the motivating theme for a lot of... Well, here I think shock television does not need to stay on, like, of the
this
four.
Board?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because to me, it comes down to, like, it's the type of shock television. It's the really homophobic,
yes, kind
of, like, nature of what they were pushing. And it's like, do you want to be more like down on, like, Jenny Jones and her producers, or like the just like homophobia broadly?
So what are we gonna do here? I'm trending towards homophobia, and a part of me doesn't want to take the blame off of Jonathan, but I do understand. I think his homophobia and society's homophobia caused this.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what are we thinking here?
And even the producers wanted to cash in on the homophobic element. So
I think homophobia should get a big old slap.
Slap it, right? Send it to the jail, though, because it's just, I can't. He could have just not killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Yeah.
He had a choice.
He had a choice.
All right, I'm going to call
just it. Like a gay person does. Should be gay.
Oh, Tony.
Tony.
No.
That's right. I'm quoting the Washington Post.
Someone's going to grab
that. Yeah, someone's going to grab that sign out of you now, and they're going to be like, Tony Rodriguez thinks that gay.
Oh, please come for me. Yes. Over that.
All right, I'm gonna call it. Sharp
U-turn from everything I've ever said.
True.
They were like, "Wow, Tony's really changed ever since going on the alarmist."
It's the AI, Tony.
Blame it on the AI. Got smart.
All right, calling it homophobia. You're getting the big slap, Jonathan Schmitz. You're going to the alarmist jail. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We did it,
Tony.
Can I say also big slap is like kind of dramatic and gay.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Sure, can be. Absolutely.
And Jenny Jones,
yes,
just so you know, she has her healthy recipes at jennycancook.com, where millions of people from all over the world are enjoying her easy recipes and her wildly popular cooking shows on YouTube. So basically, she's staying out of television.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for joining us and helping us get to the bottom of who's to blame for this terrible tragedy.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
In the aftermath, Jonathan reportedly told police that his experience at the taping ate away at him, and he sat in the car thinking before he knocked on Scott's door the morning of the murder. Both the case defense attorneys and prosecutors, as well as Scott and Jonathan's families, both believe that Jenny Jones and her staff were partly to blame in Amador's murder. The jury originally debated on a first-degree murder charge for Jonathan. However, they landed on a second-degree charge after discussing Jonathan's mental state. On September 14, 1999, Jonathan Tyler Schmitz was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to 25 to 50 years in prison for murdering Scott Amador. Also in 1999, the Amador family sued the Jenny Jones Show, Telepictures, and Warner Brothers, citing its ambush tactics and negligence. The Jenny Jones Show was found negligent by the civil court and awarded $25 million to Scott's family. However, the ruling was reversed on appeal by the Michigan Court of Appeals, who found that the murder was unpredictable. Jonathan Schmitz was 47 when he was released from prison in 2017 after serving 22 years. Today, certain talk shows now have psychological profiling in place when researching guests. The Alarmist is now on Patreon. Subscribe and get ad-free content along with bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/thealarmist or check out the link in our
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Show description. Visit our website and let us know who you think is to blame at www.thealarmistpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram at The Alarmist Podcast and on Twitter at Alarmist The. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early and editing by Molly Hockey. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Crystal Dinsberg. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Supreme Court case of Loving versus Virginia.
Powered by Acast.